he has graduated to them. These provide more of the vitamins, minerals, and protein ordinarily obtained from animal products than their refined varieties do. Turn to tofu. Use tofu and other soy-based products to provide added protein when your baby moves on to solids. When the pediatrician gives you okay, brown rice or quinoa cooked until it's fairly soft, mashed chickpeas or other beans and peas, and high protein or whole grain pastas can also be added to the diet as sources of protein. And don't forget to bring on the edamame. Cooked until very soft and shelled, served puree at first, mashed later, these soybeans are tasty and full of protein. Concentrate on calories. Growing babies need plenty of calories to grow on, and getting enough fuel is more difficult on a diet that's limited to plant food. Keep an eye on baby's weight gain to make sure she's taking enough calories. If it seems to be slacking, boost her breast milk intake and focus on higher calorie plant foods, such as avocados. Don't forget the fat, the good fat that is. Vegans who never eat animal products at all have to look elsewhere for good fats like omega-3 fatty acids, avocados, canola, and flaxseed oil, and when introduced, nut butters. Changes in bowel movements.
Since I started my breastfed baby on solids last week, his poops have been more solid, which I would expect, but they are also darker and smellier. Is this normal?
Sadly, the sweet-smelling poop party is over once you invite solids into your baby's diet. Party pooping solids change a breastfed baby's stools from soft, mustardy, and mild to thick, dark, and smelly, seemingly overnight. Not necessarily a diaper change for the better, but a completely normal one. Expect your baby's stool to become increasingly adult-like, as his diet does, though a breastfed baby's may remain somewhat softer than a bottle-fed's until weaning.
I just gave my baby carrots for the first time, and her next bowel movement was bright orange.
What goes in must come out. And in babies with their immature digestive systems, it sometimes doesn't change very much in the process. Once they start solids, their stools seem to vary movement to movement, often reflecting the most recent meal in color or texture. Later on, foods not chewed thoroughly, especially those that are harder to digest, may come out whole or nearly so. As long as bowel movements don't also contain mucus, and aren't unusually loose, which might signal gastrointestinal irritation, and the need to withhold the offending food for a few weeks, you can continue her newly varied diet without concern.
Elimination communication. Eager to get started on Project Potty now while your baby is still, well, a baby? You're not alone. One toilet training trend that's getting a lot of playground press is called elimination communication. Essentially, very early potty lessons for the new-to-diapers set, aka infants. How can you turn your baby into a potty prodigy if you so choose? First, become attuned to your little one's pooping and peeing schedule. Babies usually pee when they wake up, sometime after feeding, and at regular intervals between feedings. Pooping also tends to occur at fairly regular intervals throughout the day, usually after a feeding. Then you'll want to watch your baby closely for those elimination signs. You know what they are. The grunts, the red face, the pursed lips, the look of concentration, becoming still for a minute, maybe a little shivery shudder. The more attuned you are to your little one's pooping and peeing schedule, the easier it'll become to spot those signs. As soon as you know your baby's about to go, hold him or her over the potty and make a specific sound, such as psst, to cue your baby that it's time to pee. Pretty soon, your little one will associate the position and the sound with the need to pee. Do the same with pooping and a different sound, like a grunt. Not all experts agree that babies this young have the muscle control necessary to truly be potty trained, and some worry that starting the potty learning process so early could set up unrealistic expectations on the part of the parents, as well as a potential for struggles between parent and child. But if you're up for and eager for super early training, go for it. Just be prepared to spend lots of time on the project. Remember, it'll be labor-intensive for you, requiring you to have very quick reflexes and a super flexible schedule. But when it works, elimination communication allows diapers to be ditched much earlier than what's currently the norm, around age 3. Your baby seems stressed out by your campaign to potty train? That's a sign to back off for now. There's plenty of time to hop on the potty train.
Walkers and stationary play centers.
My daughter seems very frustrated that she can't get around yet. She's not content to lie in her crib or sit in her infant seat, but I can't carry her all day. Can I put her in a walker?
Life can be frustrating when you're all revved up with no place to go, or at least no way to get there without a grown-up's help. These frustrations often peak when an eager-to-get-going baby's able to sit fairly well, but unable to get around on her own, by crawling, creeping, cruising, or whatever method she's first able to come up with. The obvious solution used to be a walker, a seat set inside a table framework on four-wheeled legs that allowed babies to zoom happily around the house long before they achieved independent mobility. But because walkers have been the cause of too many injuries requiring medical treatment, from head injuries caused by falls to burns that result from scooting over to an open oven door or to a toaster that can be pulled down by its cord, and many more that are kissed and made better at home, they are no longer recommended. And in fact, the AAP has called for a ban on the manufacture and sale of all mobile walkers. They're already banned in Canada. A somewhat satisfying, safer substitute for a walker is a stationary activity center, like the Exercisor, which allows babies some movement. A little one can bounce, rock, and swivel without the risk of a mobile walker. They're also pretty entertaining, with most providing a bouncy seat that spins and a selection of toys to play with, often including light and sound features. Still, they don't come without a downside. First, a baby whose frustrations lie in not being able to get around without hitching a ride from mom or dad isn't likely to be any less frustrated in a walker that doesn't move. She might even become more frustrated once she realizes that the stationary variety moves only in circles. I'm moving, but I'm not getting anywhere. What's more, research shows that babies who spend too much time in a stationary play center, as in a walker, infant seat, or swing, may be slower to sit, crawl, and walk, since they don't get as much opportunity to flex the muscles necessary to practice and master those skills. In fact, babies use a different set of muscles to stay upright in a stationary activity center than they do to stay upright for walking. And because they can't see their feet in an activity center, they're deprived of the visual clues that would help them figure out how their bodies walk through space, a key part of learning how to walk. Finally, they don't learn how to balance themselves and how, when balance fails them, to fall and pick themselves back up, also vital steps in becoming a solo walker. If you do choose to use an Exercisor or other stationary activity center, follow these tips for keeping baby both content and safe while she's in it. Test drive before you buy. The best way to find out if your baby's ready for a stationary activity center is to let her try one out. If you don't have a friend whose baby has one, go to a store and let your baby try out a floor model. As long as she seems happy and doesn't slump, she's ready to take it for a spin or a bounce. Watch her activity. Stationary activity centers aren't a substitute for supervision any more than swings, jumpers, infant seats, or bouncers are. Leave your baby in her Exercisor only when she can be watched, and don't place it anywhere near something she shouldn't touch or reach for, like the cord on a phone charger or a hot cup of coffee. Limit her activity. For most babies, 5 or 10 minutes in the activity center and they're more than ready for another activity and clamoring to get out. A few will be happy to bounce, spin, and play for far longer, but it's best to limit even a completely content activity center activist to no more than 30 minutes per session. Every baby needs to spend some time on the floor practicing skills, such as lifting her belly off the ground while on all fours, that will eventually help her to sit and crawl. She needs the opportunity to pull up on coffee tables and kitchen chairs in preparation for standing and later walking. She needs more chances to explore and handle safe objects in her environment than any confined seat, even a really fun one, allows. And she needs the interaction with you and others that free play requires and allows. Don't delay packing away. The activity center, that is. As soon as your baby starts getting ready to start taking on crawling or cruising, pack away the extra saucer and let her practice her floor exercises, the ones that will eventually help her stand up and deliver those first steps, ending her frustrating era of immobility for good. Keeping her cooped up in an activity center not only won't help speed those steps, but its continued use may cause confusion, because standing in an activity center and standing and walking solo require different body movements.
The 30-minute rule. Some babies are quick to set their own limits on the time they spend in activity centers, jumpers, and swings, often too quick for the parents who crave a little break from toting their little ones. But others can't get enough of that swinging, bouncing, jumping, and swiveling stuff, and they'll entertain themselves happily in their activity centers for as long as they're allowed. Yet babies can get too much of these good things, even if they don't realize they can. To make sure your little one gets lots of opportunities to flex different muscles and get a different perspective, limit sessions in all of these baby entertaining gadgets to no more than 30 minutes at a time, and try not to exceed a total of an hour a day.
Pre-walking shoes.
My baby's not walking yet, of course, but her outfits look so much cuter with shoes. Is there a certain kind I should look for?
Socks, booties, or weather permitting, bare feet are best for your baby at this stage of development, offering room to breathe, stretch, and flex. Still, there's nothing wrong with outfitting her tiny tootsies in something a little more styling on special occasions, or cold ones, as long as it's the right kind of style. Since your baby's feet aren't made for walking, at least not yet, the shoes you buy shouldn't be either. Shoes for infants should be lightweight and made of a breathable material, leather, cloth, or canvas, but not plastic, with soles so flexible that you can feel baby's toes through them. Hard soles are a baby shoe must not do.
All about stimulating your older baby.
Already peekabooed and patacaked out? Blown so many raspberries your cheeks hurt? This little piggy has cried wee, wee, wee one too many times in your home? Then there's good news. Though these timeless newborn games will probably still get lots of play in the months to come, your older baby is game to take on a more sophisticated playlist. Not to mention, take on more of the play. No more lying back while you do all the work. Your baby is ready to be an active participant instead of a passive audience, engaging, interacting, exploring, and learning by doing. Ready to coordinate senses that were once used one at a time, seeing what's being touched, looking for what's being heard, touching what's being tasted. Ready and eager for more challenges, more excitement, more stimulation. Here's how you can help. Large motor skills. Physical skills take practice, 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 which your baby can't get while cooped up in a stroller or bouncer. So let your little one loose and provide lots of opportunities that allow him or her to develop the large motor strength and coordination eventually needed for sitting, crawling, walking, climbing, throwing a ball, riding a scooter, and more. change up baby's position often, from back to tummy, from propped up to prone, from the crib to the floor, so he or she will have the chance to practice all kinds of physical feats. During tummy time, place an object just out of baby's reach to encourage him or her to stretch for it. Let baby lie on his or her back with those cute tootsies within kicking distance of an activity gym. A musical one that makes noise every time a kick makes contact provides even more satisfaction. Grab a stability or birthing ball and place baby on top, either sitting with your hands firmly holding him or her, or lying tummy down, ditto, for balance practice. And then, as your baby seems ready, you won't know until you try, provide the opportunity to do the following. Pull to sitting. Sit in a frog position, like a tripod. Sit upright, propped with pillows if necessary. Stand on your lap and bounce. Pull to standing, holding onto your fingers. Pull to standing in a crib or play yard or another furniture. Lift up on all fours. Small motor skills. At your baby's fingertips is a world of essential skills just waiting to be mastered. And lots of ones that are just plain fun, too. From eating, to painting and crayoning, to writing, to brushing teeth, to buttoning a shirt, to putting on socks, to pouring magical tea for a favorite teddy. But first, those tiny fingers and hands will need to develop the dexterity necessary to grab onto life's challenges, big and small. Again, opportunity rocks. Babies who are given lots of chances to use their hands a lot, yes, even to smear oatmeal in their hair, to manipulate objects of all kinds, to touch, explore, and experiment, not to mention mouth everything they can, with those 10 determined digits and flex those small muscle groups, will develop dexterity faster. To help, offer activity cubes, boards, or tables. A variety of activities gives baby plenty of practice flexing those small motor skills, though it will be months before most babies can conquer them all. Activity gyms also offer plenty of small motor fun as baby progresses from swatting at the hanging toys to making contact, score, to grabbing on. Blocks, simple cubes of wood, plastic, or cloth, large or small, are appropriate at this age. Your little one will grab and eventually pick them up, learning how to knock them together and make music, at least to his or her ears. Though babies this age don't yet have the dexterity to stack blocks and other stacking toys, they get their kicks by unstacking. Soft dolls and stuffed animals. Handling them builds dexterity. As your cutie gets bigger, dolls with different textures and features, buttons, zippers, laces, will excite the senses and help improve small motor dexterity. Finger foods. As they're introduced into baby's diet, finger foods can help build pincer grasp skills. Oat circles, soft peas and carrots, and other small but safe-to-eat foods will help baby learn how to use his or her thumb and index finger to pick up bite-sized morsels. Until then, foods that can be palmed, whole grain breadsticks, cubes of cheese, chunks of soft melon, once they've been introduced, will help develop small motor skills. Real or toy household objects. Babies usually love real or toy cell phones, mixing spoons, measuring cups, strainers, pots and pans, paper cups, and empty boxes. Balls of varying sizes and textures to hold, to squeeze, to swat at, that light up or make sounds. They're especially fun once baby is able to sit up and roll them or crawl after them. Stacking containers. First to just hold and drop, then to try to clang together, then to actually stack one into the other. Though it'll be quite some time before baby's able to manage that skill. Finger games. At first, you'll be the one to play clap hands, pat a cake, the itsy bitsy spider, and similar games. But before you know it, baby will be playing along. After you do a demonstration or two, assist baby with a finger game while you sing along. Don't be surprised if baby pulls your hands into his or her mouth. Social skills. The middle of the first year is a very sociable time for most babies. They giggle, laugh, squeal, and communicate in a variety of other ways, like kicking their little legs when they're excited, and will share eye contact and a smile with anyone who's within cooing distance, whether it's an admirer in the park or a stranger at the supermarket or their own image in the mirror. Now, before stranger anxiety starts to rear its fearful head, that's usually later in the first year, it's the perfect time to nurture the budding social butterfly in your baby, to go places where you'll see people of all ages, to let your little life of the party interact and be interacted with. Let your baby learn from your social experience too. Teach through example a simple greeting like hi, and model some of the other basic social graces, such as waving bye-bye, blowing a kiss, and saying thank you. Remember, you're just planting seeds now, so no pushing is needed. Feeling a little more socially ambitious? Consider joining a play group. The babies won't group play per se, but they'll definitely get a kick out of watching each other. Excellent, if not required, practice for the years of socializing ahead. Cognitive skills. Comprehension is beginning to dawn, and it's pretty exciting stuff. Names, mommies, daddies, siblings are recognized first, followed by basic words. No, bottle, bye-bye, for example. And pretty soon after, simple, often heard sentences. Do you want to drink? Or make nice to the doggy. This receptive language, understanding what they hear, will come well before spoken language, but it's huge, transforming a baby's perspective on the world. Now I get it. Other types of intellectual development are also on the horizon. Many years ahead of that first math class, your baby is actually taking the first steps, though it won't seem so at first, toward acquiring the skills of rudimentary problem solving. Observation and memorization, concepts that appear simple to you but are complex for your baby. You can help by playing games that stimulate your baby's brain and help explain concepts. Cause and effect, fill a cup with water in the tub and let baby turn it over. And object permanence, cover a favorite toy with a cloth and then have baby look for it or play peekaboo behind your hands, a book, a menu. Point out, this teddy is soft, the coffee is hot, the car goes fast, you're sleepy. The ball is under the table. While using objects, describe what they're for. This broom is for sweeping, this chair is for sitting on, this towel is for drying, a book is for reading. At first, your words will be meaningless to baby, but eventually, with lots of repetition, the concepts will start to crystallize. Tuning your child in to the world of sounds. When a plane goes by overhead or a fire engine speeds down the street, sirens screaming, point them out to baby. That's an airplane. Or, do you hear the fire engine? Emphasizing and repeating the key words, airplane, fire engine, will also help with word recognition. Do the same when you turn on the vacuum or the water in the bathtub, when the tea kettle whistles or the doorbell or phone rings. And don't overlook those favorite funny noises. Razzes on baby's belly or arm, clicks with your tongue, and whistles are all educational too, encouraging imitation, which in turn encourages language development. Encouraging curiosity and creativity. Give your child a chance to experiment and explore. Whether that means pulling up tufts of grass in the garden, smearing applesauce all over his hair or her t-shirt, or squeezing out a wet washcloth in the tub. A baby will learn volumes more through experience than through instruction, and this kind of play and exploration is absolutely free. So step back and let your baby call the shots by choosing what to play with and how.
How do you speak to your baby now? Now that your baby hovers on the brink of learning your language, what you say to him or her takes on new meaning. You can help your baby's language skills along in the following ways. slow down. When baby is starting to try to decode your language, which is just jargon to those tiny, untrained ears, fast talk will slow those efforts. To give your baby the chance to begin picking out words, speak slowly, clearly, and simply. Focus on single words. Continue your running commentaries, but begin emphasizing individual words and simple phrases commonly used in baby's everyday life. At feeding time, when you say, "I'm putting cereal in the bowl," hold up the cereal and add, "Cereal, here is the cereal." Hold up the bowl and say, "Bowl." Always pause to give baby plenty of time to decipher your words before going on to say more. Downplay pronouns. Pronouns are still confusing for your baby, so stick to, "This is Daddy's shoe," and "That is Gray's shoe." Emphasize imitation. Now that the number of sounds your baby makes is growing, so is the fun you can have imitating each other. Whole conversations can be built around a few consonants and vowels. Baby says, "Ba, ba, ba, ba," and you come back with an animated, "Ba, ba, ba, ba." Baby replies, "Da, da, da, da," and you respond, "Da, da, da, da." If baby seems receptive, you can try offering some new syllables, "Ga, ga, ga, ga," for example, encouraging imitation. But if the role reversal seems to turn baby off, switch back again. In not too many months, you'll find your baby will begin trying to imitate your words without prompting. Talk it up. Talk to your baby about everything and anything as you go about your day together. Be natural in your conversation, but with a baby-friendly inflection, as feels comfortable to you, that is. Build a repertoire of songs and rhymes. Ever find yourself tuning out after too many rounds of Wheels on the Bus? While it's mind-numbing to you, repetition is music to your baby's ears, which pick up more and more from the same old, same old. It doesn't matter if you lean on Mother Goose, Dr. Seuss, or your own creativity. What counts is consistency. Bank on books. There's a world of words in even the simplest board books. Open up that world by opening up books often with your baby. As you read, do plenty of pointing out of single objects, animals, or people. Start asking, "Where is the dog?" And eventually, baby will surprise you by placing a pudgy paw right on spot. Wait for a response. Though baby may not be talking yet, he or she is beginning to process information and will soon start having a response to what you say, even if it's just an excited squeal when you've proposed a walk in the stroller, or a pouty whimper when you've announced it's time to come off the swing. Be commanding. In time, your baby will learn to follow simple commands such as "kiss grandma," or "wave bye-bye," or "give mommy the dolly." Add "please" if you want the word to eventually come naturally to baby. But keep in mind that baby won't follow through on your requests for months to come, and even when he or she begins to, the response won't be consistent or immediate. Baby may wave bye-bye, but not until 5 minutes after your friend has left the building. Don't show disappointment when baby doesn't perform. Instead, help your little one act out your request, waving bye-bye yourself, while waiting for him or her to catch on, typically not until closer to the first birthday. Chapter 12, The Seventh Month.
Still a social animal, with a serious charm offensive and a smile that happily just won't quit, your baby is also beginning to notice that there's a fascinating world beyond your adoring face, just waiting to be explored. And explore it your baby will. That is, as soon as he or she figures out how to get around in it. Which is just a matter of time, since the days of being able to plop your baby down in the middle of the floor, secure that he or she will stay there, are numbered. It may be weeks, or it may be a month or two or more. But before you know it, baby will likely be twisting, rolling, creeping, and crawling from one end of the room to the other. Though some babies opt out of all fours and skip straight to 2 feet, especially if they haven't spent much time on their tummies. With independent mobility just around the corner, and with it, access to such dangerous baby temptations as the stairs, the dishwasher, and the glass coffee table. It's time to do a thorough childproofing of your home, if you haven't yet.
Feeding your baby. Ready-made or homemade baby foods.
Will the spoon you'll be piloting into your eager baby's tiny mouth be filled with store-bought baby food or heaped with the homemade kind? Or perhaps a combination of both? The choice of what to serve your new eater is yours. And hint, all of these choices are good ones.
Baby basics at a glance. 7th month. Sleeping. Your baby should be logging in around 9 to 11 hours of sleep each night and 3 to 4 hours of sleep during the day, probably split up into a morning and afternoon nap. That's a total of around 14 hours during each 24-hour day. Eating. Though baby has probably started eating solids now, most nutritional requirements are still being filled via breast or bottle. Breast milk. Your baby will feed around 4 to 6 times a day. Some babies will nurse more often, possibly way more. Baby will be drinking somewhere between 24 and 30 ounces of breast milk a day, though as more solids are added to the diet, that amount will decrease. Formula. Your baby will probably drink 4 to 5 bottles a day, filled with 6 to 8 ounces of formula, for a total of 24 to 30 ounces per day. As more solids are added to the diet, baby will feed on less formula. Solids. How much will your baby eat, solids-wise? For a newbie eater, think about 1 to 2 tablespoons or less each of cereals, fruits, and vegetables as they're introduced, twice a day. Once baby gains eating experience, total intake may range anywhere from 3 to 9 tablespoons of cereal, fruit, and vegetables each or less per day, over 2 to 3 feedings. Just remember, baby's the boss when it comes to intake. Let appetite rule the high chair. Playing. Baby will love to play with action-reaction toys, ones that light up or play music when baby presses a button, for instance. Stacking toys, ones with different sized rings or multicolored cubes, though baby won't be able to stack them properly yet. Toys that encourage crawling, cars, trains, balls that roll, light up, make music. Roly-poly toys, they right themselves when rolled over. And toys that encourage pulling up to standing, make sure they're sturdy. Don't forget to keep a rotating stock of colorful board books for baby to page through with you, and on his or her own.
Ready-made baby food. Ready-made baby food available in classic jars, boxes, convenient pouches, and single-serving frozen cubes comes with a price, but also with a lot of perks. First, it's usually just as nutritious for your little one as homemade, especially when it comes to the simple fruit and veggie purees you're likely to premiere with. Sometimes they're more nutritious, at least when it comes to out-of-season fruits and veggies. All first-stage food labels list wholesome, totally recognizable ingredients. Buy a pouch of peaches, for instance, and you'll probably get nothing but peaches. The pureed varieties are the perfect consistency for beginners, and single-ingredient starter foods make it easy to screen for allergies. While homemade foods may vary in taste and texture from batch to batch, store-bought is consistently consistent in both. Plus, they're manufactured under uber-sanitary conditions that would be hard to reproduce in your home, meaning its safety is hard to beat. And best of all, store-bought baby food is easier for you. Just open and serve. What about additives and pesticides? There are plenty of organic baby food brands, and even those brands that aren't certified are usually free of additives and test low on pesticide residues. It's when your baby gets older that you'll need to pay closer attention to what's inside that jar or pouch or box. Commercially prepared foods for older babies and toddlers can contain added sugar and refined grains. Screen labels for ingredients that your baby doesn't need, like sugar, and those that your little one should have, like whole grains, and you'll be able to fill your shopping cart and your baby's belly with only the healthiest options. Once your little chomper is able to handle softly cooked, mashed, coarsely chopped, or flaked foods from the family menu, It's smart to open up your baby's culinary horizons instead of always opening up a jar or a pouch. That's because offering table foods earlier on, rather than sticking with commercially prepared baby foods, is more likely to produce a more amenable eater. In other words, one who eats what the rest of the family is eating. Still, you probably won't want to retire baby foods entirely. They're convenient to have on hand even for older babies and toddlers when you're on the road or out and about, or when a restaurant menu or the family menu isn't exactly baby-friendly.
Squeezing the best from food pouches. They're the ultimate in convenience. Plus, they're often filled with good-for-your-baby food, from just plain peaches to wholesome blends of grains, veggies, fruits, spices, and even meat. But to make sure you're squeezing all the benefits out of food pouches without serving up any risks, keep these two tips in mind. First, squeeze the food directly onto the spoon only if you know your baby is going to finish the contents of the entire pouch in one sitting. If one pouch will cover two or more meals, you're best off squeezing the right size portion into a bowl and spooning the contents from the bowl into your baby's mouth the old-fashioned way. More dishes to wash this way, yes, but it protects your baby from bacterial contamination, which can occur when you touch the top of the pouch onto the spoon that baby's already mouthed, and then store the pouch for later use. Second, though it's certainly easy for baby to suck the yummy contents directly from the pouch as you, or later he or she, squeeze, it's not a great habit to get into. Your newbie eater is already a proficient sucker. Think of all that breast milk or formula he or she has been downing since birth. And needs to learn how to eat solids the big boy or girl way, from a spoon, and eventually a fork. Then, of course, there's the potential for contamination if your baby sucks on a pouch, drops it, then picks it up hours or days later. Plus, there's a limit to what can be eaten from a pouch. Really chunky foods, the next step to a varied diet, can't be, and neither can table foods. Occasionally, letting your little pouch potatoes suck up a meal directly from the container is fine. Say when you're out and about and don't have a spoon at the ready. Just try not to make it baby food business as usual. Instead, spoon up the practice your eager eater needs to master conventional feeding. Food for thought. Could the food that fills your baby's tummy also build his or her brain? That's the idea behind commercial baby foods that are enriched with DHA and ARA, brain-boosting fatty acids that are found naturally in breast milk and added to some formulas. How effective these foods are in increasing a child's brain power is still being researched, but since such fatty acids are also heart-healthy, there's certainly no harm and potentially plenty of benefits in choosing them for your baby. The only downside? These foods, like the specially fortified formulas, can be pricey. Also, remember, a food that's less than wholesome without added DHA is still a food that's less than wholesome once it's been added. So don't assume a food with added DHA or any fortification makes the nutritional cut without first checking out the rest of the ingredients. And whenever you can, add healthy fatty acids to your baby's diet by adding foods that contain them naturally.
Homemade baby foods. Not pressed for time? Feeling motivated? Like the idea of doing it yourself? While commercial baby foods are better than ever, preparing your baby's meals from scratch, some or all of the time, is a wonderful option, and sometimes a less pricey one. Here's what you need to know. The gear. You'll need something to grind or puree baby's food. You can use a blender, food processor, or immersion blender, equipment you likely have at home already. Or you can opt for gadgets designed specifically for baby food prep. A hand-turned food mill, which usually has different blades for different textured foods, a baby food grinder, which usually doesn't, or an all-in-one baby food maker, which both steam cooks and then purees the food. Of course, you can also go low-tech with just a fork, especially when you're preparing easily mashable foods, like avocados, bananas, or butternut squash. Even lower-tech, though hard to clean, a mesh feeder that baby can suck on. Fill it with any soft, age-appropriate fruit or veggie, These also come in easier-to-clean plastic. Food prep. Wash and then bake, boil, use as little liquid as possible, or steam produce, vegetables and hard fruits like apples and plums, for instance, before pureeing or grinding. Peel and pit or strain as needed, and then puree in a blender, grinder, or food mill, adding liquid, water, breast milk, or formula, as needed to get the desired consistency for your baby. The older baby gets, the less liquid you'll need to add. Going with the grain, cook grains and then puree or grind them, thinning with liquid as needed. Bringing on the poultry and meat, puree trimmed and skinned meats and poultry, either alone or with other already introduced foods, veggies for instance, for an all-in-one meal. Want to make your own baby cereal? Simply grind organic short-grain brown rice in a blender or a clean spice or coffee grinder until it's finely ground. At mealtime, sprinkle 2 tablespoons of the brown rice powder over a cup of boiling water and whisk until thick and creamy. Serve warm, not hot. If you like, cook this tummy-filling favorite with breast milk or formula instead of water for added nutrition. Do remember, though, that this homemade cereal isn't fortified with all-important iron, like store-bought baby cereal is. As baby gets older and has been introduced to more foods, simply give him or her what's on the menu for the rest of the family. Mash it up, blend it, or puree it to the right consistency. Add flavor the healthy way. Be sure to keep the lids on the sugar bowl and salt shaker. It's always best to give food to baby straight. After all, baby taste buds are just developing. Their sweet tooth hasn't yet been activated. And they still don't care a lick about salt. So why flip the switch early? But that's not to say you can't season with healthy herbs and spices. Cinnamon, for instance, is a high chair favorite and adds extra pizzazz to sweet potatoes, carrots, fruit, and more. Store it. DIY purees will last in the fridge for up to 4 days or in the freezer for 3 months max. Store homemade baby food in single-serving containers or ice cube trays for easy-to-serve portions that you can thaw overnight in the fridge or in a microwave at the defrost, not cook setting, and be sure to mix and test the temperature before serving to your baby. Safety. Be sure to follow the safe food prep tips in the feeding section of the 6th month chapter.
Pesticides on produce. Worried about exposure to pesticides from the foods your little one eats or will eat? You can opt for organic fruits and veggies. They're grown pesticide-free. Or you can use a produce wash or simple soap and water to wash off any pesticide residue on the outside of the produce, though that'll get rid of only surface pesticides, not pesticide that may have seeped below the skin, before making any baby food. Baby food stages. Wondering which jar or pouch to buy at which age? Luckily, it's as easy as 1, 2, 3, literally. Every baby food label is clearly marked with a 1, 2, or 3, instantly telling you what stage and age that food is for. Some labels go into even more detail, including what level of motor development matches up with each stage. This easy navigation tool means there's no guessing whether the food inside that pretty packaging is perfect for your baby. Stage 1, 4 to 6 months plus. Single ingredient pureed fruits and vegetables, though spice, usually cinnamon, may also be included. Stage 2, 6 months plus. Pureed blends of fruit, veggies, grains, and proteins in various combinations. Stage 3, 9 months plus. Combinations of chunky fruit, veggies, grains, and proteins. Weaning from the breast. Wondering when it's time to retire your breasts as baby's food source? While it's best to wait until your baby is at least 1 year old before quitting breastfeeding, some moms find they need to, or want to, wean earlier.
Baby-led weaning. Not into the whole baby food thing? Think there must be a better way to start your little one on solids without messing around with mush. you might want to consider baby-led weaning, where babies 6 months old or older jump straight to finger foods as soon as solids are introduced, bypassing purees and mush. It's called baby-led because that's what the premise is, letting your little one self-feed the healthy foods he or she wants to eat right from the start, which is why this works only for a baby who's at least 6 months old and capable of self-feeding. And it allows babies to learn how to chew, really gum first, then swallow. No mush, no purees, no food processor, no spoon feeding into your little one's mouth, no bowls to be flung. You do the cooking and prep work, baby does the rest. It also prevents parents from pushing food, since babies are in control of how much food gets transported to their mouths. Baby wants your toast? Hand it over. Junior wants to snack on the banana you're munching on? Give him a chunk and let him gum away. That chicken you're chewing on and she's reaching for? Offer her a portion. Dinner for mom and dad is steamed cauliflower and salmon? No reason baby can't dig in. Cut up a cucumber, steam a carrot until it's soft, chunk up some mango, proffer some pasta, parcel out pieces of peaches, you name it. As long as it's soft and or crumbly, cut into small, manageable pieces, baby fist size, and not on the list of foods that pose choking risk, it's on the baby-led weaning menu. Do keep in mind that while there won't be any mush with baby-led feeding, there will be plenty of mess. And that's all good. For baby, it's mainly about the experience of eating, of exploring tastes and textures, of discovering what happens when he flings a chunk of pear or she smushes a hunk of sweet potatoes between her fingers. Worried your new eater will turn into a new gagger? It'll happen, especially in the first few weeks of baby-led weaning, as baby tries to maneuver unfamiliar lumps in his or her mouth. But it's important to remember that gagging is actually a safety response to food traveling too far back into the mouth. And it's not choking, which is silent. When babies gag, they're actually handling the problem themselves. And it's best just to stay calm, or at least look calm, and wait until it passes. The gagging will ease up as baby learns to cope with the solids and the lumps. Just be sure to keep a careful watch on your little one as he munches away. Constant supervision is a must when you're feeding this way. Make sure baby is always sitting in his or her high chair before you hand over the food, and know what to do in the case of choking. Also offer up small amounts of food so baby doesn't try to wolf down too much too quickly. Wondering if baby-led weaning is right for your baby? Run the idea by your little one's pediatrician for an opinion. Look to your baby, too. Some babies like taking the feed lead, others don't. Keep in mind, too, that baby-led weaning, like so many parenting philosophies, isn't an all-or-nothing proposition. You can choose baby-led feeding some of the time, alternating with spoon feeding or adding to it. Baby eats a chunk of banana, you spoon in some yogurt.
High chair safety tips. Feeding baby safely doesn't just mean introducing new foods gradually. In fact, feeding safety begins even before the first spoon is filled, when baby first takes a seat in the high chair. To help make sure every mealtime passes safely, follow these rules. Never leave a baby unattended in a feeding chair. Have the food, a sippy cup of water, bib, paper towels, spoon, and anything else necessary for the meal ready so that you won't have to leave your little one alone while you retrieve them. Always fasten all the safety or restraining straps, even if your baby seems too young to climb out. And though many seats have crotch guards to prevent sliding out the bottom, don't forget to fasten the strap between the legs to prevent baby from climbing out. Keep all chair and eating surfaces clean, wash with soapy water, and rinse thoroughly. Baby won't think twice about picking up a decaying morsel from a previous meal and munching on it. Always be certain slide-off trays are safely snapped into place. An unsecured one could allow a lunging and unbelted baby to go flying out head first, or at least have a bad scare. Check to be sure that a folding-type chair is safely locked into the open position and won't suddenly fold up with baby in it. Place the chair away from any tables, counters, walls, or other surfaces that baby could possibly kick off from, causing the chair to tumble backward. To protect baby's fingers, know where they are before attaching or detaching the tray. Use a hook-on seat only on a stable wooden or metal table. Do not use it on glass-topped or loose-topped tables, tables with a support in the center, baby's weight could topple it, card tables, aluminum folding tables, or on a table leaf. If your little one can rock the table isn't stable enough. Be certain any locks, clamps, or snap-together parts are securely fastened before putting your baby in the seat, and always take your baby out of the seat before releasing or unfastening it. What you may be wondering about.
Picking up baby.
I pick up my baby the minute he cries, and end up carrying him around with me much of the day. Am I spoiling him?
Your arms may be weary, but until your baby starts getting around on his own, they're his only ticket to ride. They're also his favorite ticket to comfort when he's cranky, to entertainment when he's bored, to company when he's lonely. Plus, they're his favorite place in the world to spend time. Still, while all the holding in the world can't possibly spoil your little one, and withholding holding can make him even more clingy, there are some good reasons why you might want to slow down on your pickups, at least somewhat. Playing baby taxi, picking up your tiny passenger the moment you're hailed by a wave of that little arm or a whimper of boredom, can leave you on duty throughout your baby's waking hours. What's more, carrying baby around the clock not only prevents you from getting things done, it can prevent him from getting things done. In your arms, your baby doesn't have the opportunity to practice skills such as creeping and crawling that'll eventually allow him to get around without a free ride. It also doesn't give him a chance to flex his fledgling muscles of independence in other important ways, such as learning how to keep himself entertained and enjoy his own good company, even if it's only for a few fleeting moments. So what should you do the next time your little one whimpers for a pick-me-up? First consider, is it a call for a ride or a call for attention? Has it been one of those days when you're spending most of your time playing catch-up on chores or going app-happy instead of playing with your baby? Your baby may be hitting you up for some FaceTime, something he needs in generous, regular doses, as much as for the arm time. Next, run a comfort check. Is his diaper dirty? Is it feeding time? Is he thirsty? Tired? You've satisfied all those needs. Proceed. Move him to a new location. The play yard if he was in the bouncer. The play mat if he was in the play yard. Propped up sitting if he was on the play mat. A change of scenery may satisfy his wanderlust. Create a new diversion. With an age-appropriate attention span of mere minutes, if that, you'll need to regularly rotate your little guy's selection of toys or other diversions. Just remember, more is not more to a baby. It's only overwhelming. Keep the new selections to a manageable number. Two or three at a time is plenty. Try a drive-by. He's still pleading for a pickup. Instead, try swooping in for a moment of FaceTime. Plop down beside him and show him how to stack some blocks. Point out the eyes, nose, mouth on his stuffed dog. Push the buttons on his pop-up toy. Getting him started may keep him going, if only for a few minutes. Keep him waiting. You've tried everything, but the calls for a pickup keep coming in. Try to delay the inevitable for a minute or two. Go about your business casually, singing, chatting, and smiling as you do. Have him wait for his ride a little bit longer each time, but don't have him wait so long that whimpers escalate to wails, and he starts to think of playing solo as a punishment, which it isn't. Return to his side, reassure him, play with him, cuddle him, pick him up if necessary, and then start the process over again. Not getting far or even across the room without being hailed by that pint-sized passenger. The reality is, most babies won't play for more than a few minutes on their own, and even very independent ones need frequent changes of scenery and toys. Another reality? There may be more to life in your arms, but it's still the good life for your baby.
Facing front facts. Wearing your baby snuggled against your chest is undeniably yummy. Just smell that sweetness. It's also convenient, or more like indispensable, when you'd like your baby close and your hands free. What's more, those snuggles are important for your baby, both emotionally and physically. But at some point, your baby may signal that he or she is eager for a little more freedom of movement and a lot more perspective. At least, more than a parent's chest can offer. The inward-facing position, as perfect as it is for young babies, may get old fast after 6 months or so, especially when there's something interesting to see, say, at the aquarium, the zoo, or the park, dog ahead, birds overhead, flowers on your left. Enter the front-carrying position, which, depending on the carrier you've been using for inward-facing, may mean flipping your baby to front-facing, or if your carrier doesn't offer a facing-out option, investing in a multi-purpose carrier that does. That is, unless you've heard some unsettling reports on carrying a baby facing forward, in which case you may be understandably hesitant to make the switch. Maybe you've heard that carrying your baby facing forward in a baby carrier is unsafe for your little one's hips and spine, or that it could be overstimulating or undernurturing. Happily, there isn't any scientific evidence to support those theories, at least once a baby is old enough, usually at about 5 or 6 months, to appreciate a front-facing view of the world and smart enough to tell you how much front-facing is too much. To set the record straight, here are some front-facing facts. Myth: facing forward in a baby carrier places too much stress on your baby's crotch and lower spine because it shifts his or her center of gravity. Fact: a baby's body isn't like an adult's. In fact, baby's head is much larger relative to body size, making the weight distribution very different from that of an adult. Consequently, what may seem uncomfortable or dangerous for an adult, being dangled by the crotch, doesn't apply to an infant. In fact, with a baby, the brunt of his or her body weight isn't felt in the seat, but rather is distributed throughout the upper back, neck, and head. There are no studies demonstrating that forward-facing carrying puts too much stress on a baby's spine when baby's legs are spread out and hips are spread apart, as per the manufacturer's instructions. And despite the increase in parents using forward-facing carriers, there has not been a corresponding increase in spine and crotch injuries among infants. Myth: forward-facing baby carriers can cause hip dysplasia. Fact: hip dysplasia, a condition where the bones of the hip joints do not align correctly, is congenital, meaning it's present from birth, though it usually isn't diagnosed until later in infancy. The theory that baby carriers cause hip dysplasia is not supported by any studies or scientific evidence, and most experts agree the carriers don't and can't cause that condition. And again, even with an increase in the use of front-facing baby carriers, there hasn't been a corresponding increase in hip dysplasia cases. In fact, when used properly, making sure your baby is held in the carrier with his or her legs spread out as per the manufacturer's instructions, and/or choosing a carrier that has a structured bucket seat, ensuring that the correct squat leg sitting position is maintained, even in the front-facing position, the hips are abducted, held apart, and that's the ideal way to keep your baby's hips developing properly. Myth: the best way to prevent hip problems in a baby is to wear baby in a sling. Fact: slings come with a slew of benefits, but they, like other carriers, can do harm if they're not used correctly. Studies show that when babies are carried papoose style, with legs together, or in a sling with their legs straight and together, or when babies are swaddled tightly with their legs pulled straight and together, there's an increased risk of improper hip development. Luckily, minimizing that risk is as easy as proper positioning. When you put your baby in a sling or swaddle, make sure you leave room to allow the hips and knees to move freely. Also remember, switching positions ensures not only a different vantage point for baby, but an opportunity for him or her to flex different bones, muscles, joints, and ligaments so they all get the workout they need. Myth: the forward-facing position can result in baby being overstimulated by the view and unable to nuzzle into your body to avoid looking at something overwhelming. Plus, you won't be able to tune in when your baby's upset or stressed out because he or she is facing out. Fact: whether you're strolling down the street or the aisles of a supermarket, it's a busy world out there. Sometimes too busy for a young baby whose brand new circuits can be easily overloaded by stimuli. Once babies have clocked in 5 or 6 months on the planet, however, many are not only ready but eager to absorb more of their surroundings. Facing a parent's chest is still comforting and cozy, but it may not always provide enough of the stimulation an older baby's in the market for. Switching off between an inward-facing position and an outward-facing one allows your little one to cash in on both the comfort he or she still needs and the interesting sights and sounds he or she now wants. Stay tuned in to your baby while you're carrying him or her front-facing, and you'll be able to notice signs that he or she is uncomfortable or overstimulated, tired or zoning out, crying, turning the head away, fussing. That's your cue to flip baby around to inward-facing. Keep front-facing time limited to periods your baby can handle. Be sure to interact while he or she is facing out. Point out those interesting sights and sounds. Sing or chat. Squeeze those little hands and stroke those chubby legs. And of course, plant plenty of kisses on that sweet head, and you'll both enjoy the ride without any developmental downside. For parents, only for you behavior. The babysitter says your baby's an angel, feeds like a pro, naps like a champ, smiles for miles, which makes the wailing that starts the minute the sitter walks out the door or the minute you walk out of daycare with that angel in your arms all the more disheartening, leaving you to wonder, is it me? Actually, it is you, and that's a good thing. The fact that most older babies and toddlers and even older children are more likely to crank up the crankies with their parents than with other care providers is a sign of comfort and security. Your love is a sure thing, something your little one can count on receiving in spades, even when those true blue colors show through. Timing may also have something to do with the meltdown. Your homecoming probably coincides with what's typically a baby's fussiest time of the day, early evening, when fatigue, overstimulation, and hunger can get the best of even the most cheerful cherub. After a hard day on the job and possibly a difficult commute, you may be frazzled on your return too, something baby's keen mood radar is sure to pick up on. Your high stress level intensifies your baby's, and his or hers reinforces yours. And pretty soon, you've both got a bad case of the crabbies. Add the distraction factor, understandably, you have more things to focus on when you walk in the door than your baby, like changing your clothes or starting dinner, and you're keying up for baby's cries for attention by the time you've dropped your keys. Are you nursing on reentry? Your milk supply may be at its lowest point of the day, definitely not a high point for your hungry baby. And finally, change isn't something that all babies believe in, especially older ones, which means that this changing of the guardians may be unsettling in and of itself. To ease the transition when you return home each night, try the following tips. Don't come home to a hungry, tired baby. Have feeds timed so you'll both have a chance to unwind before it's time to refill. Just make sure, if you're breastfeeding, that your baby won't have sucked down a bottle right before you arrive home with full breasts. Instead, have the care provider offer a solids snack to take the edge off that tender appetite without sabotaging it entirely. Same when it comes to sleep. A nap later in the afternoon may also help keep the crankies at bay, but make sure baby's not napping so late that he or she won't be able to settle down at a reasonable hour. Relax before you return. If you've been stuck in traffic for an hour, sit in your car and do a few relaxation exercises before you walk in the door. Instead of spending your commute on the bus or train doing last-minute work on your iPad, use the time to empty your mind of worries and fill it with thoughts that soothe you. Say the image of a frozen drink on a warm beach. Relax when you return. Don't rush to start dinner or fold laundry the moment you put down your bag or briefcase. Instead, take 15 minutes to unwind with your baby, offering cuddles and your complete, undivided attention, if possible. If your baby seems to be the kind who hates transitions, don't rush the babysitter out the door either. Reinsert yourself into your baby's day gradually so that he or she can get used to the idea that a change is about to take place. When baby adjusts to you both being there, then the babysitter can exit. Include baby in your to-dos. Once you're both feeling more relaxed, tackle the things you need to do. But include baby. Plunk baby in the middle of your bed, supervised, or on the floor while you change your clothes. Hold baby on your lap while you answer a text. Sit baby in the high chair with a few toys while you start dinner, chatting with your cutie as you chop vegetables. Don't take it personally. Almost all parents who work outside the home experience the homecoming meltdown. Those who have children in daycare may experience it at pickup time, on the way home, or when they arrive home. In fact, stay-at-home moms and dads may find themselves facing a similar end-of-the-day challenge, even if they've spent that whole day at home with their babies. Happy hour? It isn't.
Using a back carrier.
Our baby is getting too big to lug around in a front baby carrier. Is it safe to use a back carrier?
Once your baby can sit independently, even briefly, he's ready to graduate to a back carrier. There are front carriers that switch to a back carrying position where baby is safely nestled against your back and shoulders. And there are frame backpack type carriers that typically perch baby higher up, better for viewing the world. Assuming your back's up for the heavy lifting and baby is up for the adventure, there's no reason not to use a back carrier if you'd like. Some parents find back carriers awkward and a strain on the muscles, while others love their convenience. Some babies are thrilled by the height and the bird's eye view a frame backpack carrier affords. Others are unnerved by the precarious perch. To find out whether a back carrier is right for you and your baby, flip your 3-in-1 carrier, 3 being front, hip, and back positions, to the back, or if you're considering a frame backpack, take them for a test ride in a friend's or in a store floor sample before buying. If you do use a back carrier, always be certain baby is fastened in securely. Also be aware that the position allows a baby to do a lot more behind your back than sightseeing, including pulling cans off the shelves in the supermarket or plucking and then munching leaves off shrubs and trees in the park. Keep in mind, too, that you'll have to judge distances differently when baby's in a higher backpack type carrier. For example, when you back into a crowded elevator or go through a low doorway. Not sitting yet.
My baby hasn't started sitting up yet, and I'm worried that she's slow for her age.
Far from all babies are sitting pretty by the time they've reached the 6-month mark. And that's because sitting is just one of the many developmental milestones that can be mastered on a timeline that has a very wide normal range. While the average baby sits unsupported somewhere around 6.5 months, some very normal babies sit as early as 4 months, and others as late as 9 months, which means your little one has a long way to go before she reaches the outer limits of that normal range, and that you have no reason to stress yet about her lagging behind. What can you do to speed up your sweetie's sitting schedule? Not much. Babies are programmed by genetic factors to sit, and to accomplish other major developmental skills at a certain age. But there are ways to avoid slowing sitting, for instance, by providing plenty of supported sitting practice. A baby who's propped up often at an early age in an infant seat, a stroller, or a high chair gets the hang of hanging out in a sitting position before she's able to support herself and may sit sooner. On the other hand, a baby who spends a majority of her time lying on her back or in a baby carrier or sling and is rarely propped to sit may sit very late. In fact, babies in other cultures who are constantly worn in baby carriers often stand before they sit, so accustomed are they to the upright position. Chubbier babies may also have a harder time with sitting. It's not easy to balance all that weight, and roly-poly babies often roll right over when they try. A larger-than-average head may also tip a baby over when she tries to sit up. As long as you're giving your baby plenty of opportunities to practice her sitting skills, chances are she'll take her seat within the next 2 months. If she doesn't, and/or you feel she's not on track developmentally in other ways, talk to her doctor. Biting nipples.
My baby now has 2 teeth and seems to think it's fun to use them to bite me when she's breastfeeding. How can I break her of this painful habit?
Biting sucks, especially when it's your nipples that are being gnawed on instead of sucked on. But babies often bite the nipples that feed them, and it's a habit that can start even before those first teeth poke through. Your little nipper's nibbling may have started when she was seeking counterpressure for teething pain. Or it could have happened inadvertently. She became distracted during nursing but didn't let go of the nipple entirely, and then clamped down. Or she may have just been experimenting with her mouth,